The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast, our weekly look at the college basketball scene in both Rhode Island and a little bit around the country anyways, but we're busy in Rhode Island these days. This is Kevin McNamara at the Journal here in Providence. Bill Koch is alongside as per usual. Bill, good to be back in Rhode Island.
Kevin Mack, great to have you back in the studio. You were off location last week, and we needed to perpetrate some technological wizardry. We need to thank Madeline List again for the assist on that one, but it's nice to have you back in here with me.
Hey, let's go see if Madeline wants to come in and break down some hoops, you know? I'm sure she's up on
She probably could.
St. Joe's Hawks and the Seton Hall Pirates, who will be coming into town this weekend.
But, wouldn't shock me at all.
No, she checks a few boxes, so we'll be all set. But yes, middle of February here, things are going very well in Kingston, Rhode Island. Pretty well on the east side of Providence. Not good on Smith Hill and not good in Smithfield. That's the abridged version of where everything is for our four Division I teams, and we're going to start with the one with the best chance of dancing in March, and that would be the Rhode Island Rams. Rhodey is coming off, their worst defeat of the season. I wouldn't say worst as in worst, but their largest margin of defeat. They went to Dayton, 81-67 was the final score. Bill, that's the first time I've watched Dayton from tip to the horn. Seen them, I'd say, maybe four or five other times in halves. They're ripping teams apart. I changed the channel. That one I watched, and you had better had watched right off the top, because, boy, Dayton was very, very impressive. And I think the NCAA Tournament Committee had them at a two line.
Correct.
I'm not going to say that they're a candidate to be a one, but they shouldn't, even with a loss, or maybe even two losses from here in the end of the season. I don't see them losing two games. They shouldn't slide too much lower than a two. They have a wagon.
They're the most complete team I've seen. They have the best player I've seen. There's no question. And, you know, I say that having watched Butler in person at Providence and having watched Maryland when you or I went down there in November. Mm-hmm. You know, none of that is any disrespect to Stick Smith or to Kamar Baldwin or to the Terrapins or the Bulldogs. I don't want anyone to take it that way. But Dayton is just a puzzle with perfect pieces that fit together. Great guard play from Jalen Crutcher the other night. And Obi Toppin, obviously, is sensational. You know, it almost seemed like he ghosted in and out of that game. I know you and I were texting back and forth a little bit during it, and you said,
get him the ball.
At one point, get Obi the ball. He needs more shots. Yeah. Well, you look at the final box score, he ends up with 22 points and 10 rebounds.
And he only took 9 shots.
And it's just, you know, he is the face of how efficient they are on offense. The number two offense in the country, trailing only Gonzaga. And you saw it right at the start of the game. They hit their first 7 shots. They had a 17-0 lead. The roof was about to come off UD Arena. It really just snowed on URI from the start. And you get down to a team like that who's that talented, who probably heard in the pregame once or twice that they had lost 3 out of the last 4 at home to the Rams, who was motivated to make it a 2-game lead in the loss column atop the A-10 standings. There was no way back for the Rams in that one.
No, you know, Dave Cox has to spin it because that's what coaches do, and they did play them pretty much evenly from the 17-0 hole on, but, you know, that's sports. You don't really go for that. The other team isn't trying necessarily to win by 30. They're more than happy to play with a 17-23 point lead the rest of the way. And Rhode Island, you know, to their credit, did keep battling. And it was funny. People said, geez, well, Rhode Island's, you know, both teams are really chippy. This is the thought process. And Bill, see if you agree with me. You're down 17-0. You're getting your rear end kicked in from all sides. Mm. You have to play this team again in 3 weeks at your place, and hopefully you have to play them, potentially, again in your conference tournament. The last thing you want is to show that you just turtle and say, wow, you're really good, and you walk the other way. You have to fight back. And Rhode Island did fight back, 4 technicals fighting back. 4 on the other side, 3 on the other side?
3 on the other side, 7 total.
Yeah, yeah. James Breeding Tony Chiazza and Tim Clarkety, we knew their names by the end of the game. That's what is not supposed to happen, right? The refs are supposed to work in anonymity. Yeah. It didn't quite happen. But a little bit more on Dayton. Everyone, you know, if you didn't see Obi, you knew of him pregame, but you know him now. The guy who impressed me was Landers. He had 14 rebounds. You'd have to go back and remind me what the name of the guys who kicked Providence rear end in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago. Those 6'5", 6'6", guys who are just really tough, very skilled, and they get into you, they rebound, they defend. Those are the kind of guys that Dayton always seems to have. And you know, Landers, Crutcher, and Toppin are all really good players.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Kendall Pollard, Jordan Seibert crew there, Scoochie Smith, point guard at the time. You're right, Landers is the type of guy, and I tweeted this, you know, late in the game. I'd rather have a guy like Trey Landers, who's going to do all the dirty work stuff, give you 12 points and 7 rebounds and a block a game and a couple steals a game. I'd rather name him third team All-Atlantic 10 than, you know, a guy who scores 19 points a game for a team that loses a lot. I'd much rather have a guy who contributes to a winner than a volume scorer on a team that goes 3-15. Now, 19 points is an arbitrary number. It just sounded like a number that...
Sure.
You know, players would score, and a lot of URI fans jumped on me on Twitter thinking that it was a dig somehow at Fats Russell, who coincidentally ended up with 19 points in the game.
Okay. Newsflash, Fats Russell's going to be first team All-League, okay?
Yeah, so it wasn't that at all. It was completely misinterpreted. But Landers is the type of guy who you need on great teams behind your superstars, like Toppin. Like Crutcher, who I think is probably a first-team All-A-10 guy when it's all said and done, especially if these guys run the table. You know, it demands that you're going to have two guys on there.
Have two guys, no question.
You know, but Dayton just, they came out, they were so efficient on offense from the start. And realistically, you know, they finished 5-for-19 from three. That's one for their last 15. If they had shot the ball even at their average, they win this game by 20, 25 points going away. They had a 25-point lead with 7.5 to go. But you look at Rohde, and you know, David Cox is right to try to spin this forward, because there are a few things going on here in terms of you still need to win some games here down the stretch to solidify yourselves in the NCAA tournament picture. And you do have a rematch with Dayton coming up in March, which is a huge chance, the last Quadrant 1 game on your schedule before you go to Brooklyn for the conference tournament. And you need to get it in your own guys' heads that we do have a chance against these guys in the rematch. We do need to come out and play with some confidence and give ourselves a chance to legitimately win that game.
No, if I was the team psychologist, I'd say, okay, you know, you have to go to Dayton at some point in the year. This wasn't a bad time to do it. You know, we went out there, we shot, you know, 17 to nothing. We shot 28% from the field. They're better than us. They might be way better than us. But we do have one more chance at them, and my guess is the Bryant Center might be sold out that night.
I would think so.
I think it'll
senior
be,
night.
I think it'll be the toughest ticket in a long time. Well,
senior night.
The toughest non-Providence ticket in a long time, or it certainly should be. Senior night, National Player of the Year in the building. That'll be. I was being facetious. That will be a tough ticket.
The major drawback is it's a Wednesday at 9 o'clock.
That's okay. We'll keep the lights on for you.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I don't think they'll have a problem with that one, but. It's only mid-February. You know, during that game, how many times did you hear, well, Rhode Island's in the tournament, Rhode Island's in the NCAA tournament, Rhode Island's in the NCAA tournament? Well, no, they're not, okay? It's only, there's not too many teams around the country who are, quote, already in the NCAA tournament. It's February 15th, and everyone has 5, 6, 7 games left. Anything can happen. So, Bill, what does Rhode Island have to do to not get in the tournament, fall off the bubble? This is their schedule. They play St. Joseph's, who's winless in the A-10 Saturday, tomorrow, at the Ryan Center. I think they're going to win.
Can't lose.
Then they have a bye. A very, again, perfect timing for a bye to regroup for the home stretch. Then they go at Davidson, at Fordham, home St. Louis, home Dayton, at Massachusetts. So just we'll take tomorrow. I know it's going to take them one at a time, but we'll take tomorrow out of the conversation.
Can't lose.
And at Davidson is... That's a difficult game.
That's one that, if you're the committee, you might forgive a loss there. You know, that's one of those games that, you know, Davidson is going to be a top 100-ish type opponent. It's going to be a quadrant two opponent on the road. You know, a team that traditionally has given URI some trouble with their offensive system. You know, and a team that was shorthanded when they came to Kingston earlier this year. Rhodey bogged them down in a 69-58 win. Key against Davidson, as always, run them off the three-point line. If you can do that, then you'll be reasonably successful.
Who's back for them? Who wasn't playing earlier?
Hunjung Lee, the freshman, should be an all-A-10 freshman team guy. Had an upper body injury at the time. The rumor was behind the scenes that it might have been a concussion, and that he was, you know, out for a couple games. Can really shoot it, right around 40% from three. You know, Davidson's still dangerous with John Axel Goodmanson and Kellen Grady.
Right.
You know, still a very capable team, one that is certainly capable of beating URI at home.
Then they go to Fordham.
Can't lose the game.
Got to win it. And then I think probably the, I wouldn't say the most important game, but probably more important than Dayton. I think the St. Louis game at home is just a monster. St. Louis is going to come in 50s and 60s maybe in the net, something like that. You know, so it's certainly a quality win, but it just shows you. And St. Louis is the only team in the A-10 that's really played Dayton. I shouldn't say only team, but they've played them really close. They took them to overtime.
That's right. Played them tough. You know, played them tough at Dayton the other night as well. Lost 71-65.
Yeah.
Took them to overtime at home. Lost 78-76. You know, just you've seen St. Louis, big, physical, strong,
tough,
play
yeah.
hard defense. Right now they're 75 in the net. You know, so not necessarily a team that is going to be in contention for an NCAA bid unless, you know, they win it all in Brooklyn. But they have two of the 10 best players in the league, 15 best players in the league, Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French. You know, both of those guys have been in battles throughout their careers. Both very capable players.
Hard game, no question. Then obviously Dayton, we you know, that goes without saying, you beat Dayton, you're in the tournament. And then at Massachusetts,
can't lose it.
Senior day out there, if that means anything. I'm not quite sure if it does. The Minutemen season will be basically over by then.
Well, and you had a chippy ending to the game at home here.
Yes, you did.
73-67, where you had some post-game words exchanged. So UMass is going to be ginned up for that one for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, again, back to my question. What does Rhode Island have to do to fall off the bubble? Because I see them right now as in the tournament, but with not a comfortable seed, maybe at best a 9. I've seen them anywhere from 9, 10, and 11, which is, I think, pretty fair right now.
Well, St. Joe's, Fordham, and UMass are the three games that they must win.
Yeah.
You know, barring a victory over Dayton, another quadrant one win, which would balance one of those off, you can't lose one of those three games.
Agreed.
You just can't. You already have that bad loss on your schedule to Brown in terms of the metrics. You're not going to be able to get away with two of them. And you need to win one of the two against Davidson or against St. Louis. You know, if you win them both, you're feeling pretty good about yourselves. 5-1 puts you into the tournament, I think, regardless of what you do in Brooklyn.
So my question is, what if you go 2-3, lose at Davidson, lose to St. Louis and Dayton? I think I would be very nervous.
You can't lose all three of those games.
I'd be very nervous on Selection Sunday. I know that the record would be great. They'd, I think, be 13-5. Yeah, they have two losses now, correct?
Correct. 10-2.
So it'd be 13-5. You'd think, oh, 13-5, no problem. Well, you know, 13-5, you'd have basically, hopefully, three. No, you'd have either two or zero wins against teams in the field. Because VCU right now in a lot of projections is not in the tournament. Those are your two best wins. It is just there would be reasons for the committee to say they just haven't done enough if they lose those three games, Davidson, St. Louis, and Dayton, which is just that's not out of the realm of possibility. Those are hard games.
No, you can't go 3-3 down the stretch. That would put yourselves in peril. You'd have a lot of work to do in Brooklyn, in my mind, if you do that.
But, you know, one at a time, St. Joe's tomorrow. There was some really, I think, really fortunate, exciting news for the Rams yesterday, broke yesterday morning. Was it the Naismith Award?
The Naismith Trophy, yes, sir.
Naismith Trophy, they come out with these, there's three or four College Player of the Year awards. The Oscar Robertson Award is the other one that is top of mind. But the Naismith Award is presented by the Tip-Off Club of Atlanta. And what they do is they probably have 50 players to watch at the beginning of the season. They cut it down to 30 in mid-February, and then we'll do finalists and then name their guy at the Final Four. And our very own Deron Fats Russell made the top 30. And I saw, you were down at Kingston yesterday, and you could tell he was as surprised and happy as anybody else.
You know, and I don't know why he should be, because he has been sensational. It's one of the rare times that you would see Fats humbled. Yeah. Generally, his confidence is usually out of the gym, and I mean that in the best way possible. He's a wonderful kid, and was obviously very proud of what he's done this year, and he should be, Kevin, because
sure.
if you look at what he's done to turn his game around from last season, the improvements that he's made really across the board in every category, he's been wonderful. Really just the leader, the sort of alpha that they really needed to play themselves into NCAA tournament contention. The fearlessness and the joy with which he plays, it's infectious. If you watch him play live, whether it's at the Ryan Center or even on the road, you can't help but just watch him. At times during games, you're just watching him, whether it's on defense or when he has the ball in his hands. He has that sort of magnetic style that draws your eye to him.
I agree. It's you can't see him play and not notice his speed. His speed and quickness is truly NBA level. There's not many guys who can move around with his quickness. And when he turns it up a notch with the ball, he gets to where he needs to go, which is under control. And that's really the mark. You know, think about Dayton. You know, we were praising Dayton and the outstanding defensive job they did against Rhode Island, and yet Fats plays 31 minutes. He has no turnovers. Obviously, he didn't shoot as well as he wants to. He was 7 of 18. Most of his points came in the second half. But Dayton's putting pressure on you. And to not turn the ball over once, again, in 31 minutes, it just shows that's just a marked improvement over last year. And I know you've written about that extensively. He's really changed his game around in the last summer, and that's hats off to Fats. So, okay. Now we go into the other side of the Rhode Island basketball scene, and we'll get into the Providence Friars a little bit. When last we spoke, the Friars were very hopeful. Friar fans were all but giddy with the possibility of a late season rush to the NCAA tournament. And then the Friars go out and can't score down the stretch at Xavier. And we've seen that too many times this season. Mm. Friars come up with only 58 points in a 64-58 loss in Cincinnati. And then they make it two losses in a row with one of their worst performances of the season at St. John's, 80-69. I did some crack research today for the negative stat. I'm pretty good at that, Bill. I get it. You know, it is what it is.
You're just a terrible guy, Kevin. Yeah. We all know it.
So 24 turnovers by the Friars are the most in the Ed Cooley era. Mm. They had 23 in a game in 2013. That was a home loss to DePaul. Well, this is what happens when you turn the ball over 23 and 24 times. You lose at home to DePaul, or you go to St. John's and you lose by 11. St. John's, it's strangely enough, if Providence would have won that game at Conasucca Arena the other night, that would have been a quad one win.
Right. That's right.
So St. John's doesn't stink. You know, this is a team, that beat West Virginia and Arizona in the non-conference. They've really struggled in the league. Only two wins coming into that game, both against DePaul. But, you know, they play a unique style that probably emphasizes one thing. You need to be able to handle the ball well under pressure and execute your offense. And the Friars didn't do that in any way, shape, or form. Again, with the 24 turnovers, the 41% shooting, 27% from the three-point line. Not sure how much you saw of it, Bill, but it was ugly.
No, it was pretty obvious from the first half that the game was going to be all about pace and tempo, and St. John's forced theirs onto Providence, and the Friars never really get a handle on the game. 76 possessions in the game, which is the most Providence has played in a Big East game this season in 40 minutes. And that's what Mike Anderson wants to do. That's what he's done throughout his career, whether it's at Missouri, at Arkansas, wants to pressure you, defend hard, and force you into mistakes. And you know, Providence just played right into their hands. You just gave St. John's, who's not a good offensive team, who's missing Mustafa Heron, who's arguably their best player, you gave them the offense that they weren't going to be able to generate in any sort of half-court set. With points off turnovers, and just Providence again. It's just, we've talked about it all season. It's just so disappointing to see the talent on this team just not be able to come together, to see the guard play be so substandard, considering the lineage that Ed Cooley has had at the point guard position and in the backcourt at that program. It was another night where, they went out, they sort of looked, uninspired on offense in the first half, and they weren't going to be able to get it back in the second half. I know you said they cut it down to four at one point,
right?
But I never really got the feeling that Providence was going to get over the hump and win that game.
Well, you just knew that they'd shoot themselves in the foot, and the three primary ball handlers, Luan Pipkins, David Duke, Malik White, combined for 15 turnovers by themselves, three players. You can't win that way.
No.
And, I'll give Ed Cooley some credit here. He's been able to mask that issue with his team all season long and had them, quote, in position to at least make a decent run. But I think that door has now shut.
No question.
They have six games left. They only have six Big East wins. If you want to sign up for a 6-0, 5-1 run the rest of the way, okay, then I'm full of it. I'm not ready to do that. And the reason is the Big East. It is what it is. They'd love to play a bad team tomorrow and then play another bad team on Wednesday and then see what happens against, Villanova down the line. But they have the number 10 team in the country coming in on tomorrow at the Dunkin' Donuts Center tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. Sold out, Seton Hall.
Coming off a loss.
Coming off a loss where they gave up 87?
87 to Creighton.
I think Seton Hall will realize the importance of this game.
You think Kevin Willard has been in their ear the last couple days of practice about how giving up 87 points is unacceptable?
They'll be ready. They'll be ready. And the rest of the way, we'll see what the Nets are, by the time they get to DePaul in the last game of the season. But every team in the league is, I think it's 67 or below. There's no off nights, and Providence could use a breather and a couple of gimme wins right now, and there's no such thing. Instead, they have to win basically every game. It is what it is.
For me, the real shame of the other night was, they wasted a great performance by Alpha Diallo, who played as well in that game as I can remember him playing in a bit here. 19 points, 17 rebounds. Only two turnovers in 38 minutes. I thought he was a monster in that game. I thought he played exactly the way he needed to play throughout most of the season for Providence to be good. That undersized four who's a serious matchup problem, who sticks his nose in there in the paint. He didn't attempt a three-pointer the other night.
Well, I'm going to stop you right there. That jumps out at me. So the question is, and I didn't have a chance, Alpha was not available after the game. No, none of the players were after that loss. I'd love to know why. Was it just that's the way the game unfolded? Was it a sit-down with the coach? Was it, boy, I'm shooting 24% from the three-point line. I probably shouldn't shoot those anymore.
A homecoming to New York, perhaps.
Well, but, hey, homecoming in New York, I'm going to play hard. I'm going to get 17 rebounds, but I'd love to flash my three-point shooting game, which isn't very good. He came into the game. Let me flip through my trusty stats here. Anyways, if Fryer fans said, boy, that's the way Alpha should play, he came in shooting 25% from the three-point line.
Right.
So he probably shouldn't shoot three-pointers. And he didn't, and got an awful lot done, like you said, with it was funny, I was sitting next to someone from St. John's. They said, geez, when was the last time Providence had a guy who had a 20-and-20 game?
Mm.
I said, that's out of my department. That's out of my league.
It's got to be like Ryan Gomes level, something like that, right?
20 rebounds is a lot of rebounds.
Would Michael Smith have scored enough points to go with 20 rebounds? Because it feels like he could have got 20 rebounds.
Yeah,
in the game.
He definitely had. He had a 20-plus, I remember, against Syracuse way back, how many points he got in that game. Michael was a layup maker. So 10 layups is always possible.
No question.
A lot of offensive boards.
Who's going to get in his way at the rim?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Diallo had 8 offensive rebounds in that game. It's pretty impressive. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm writing my advance for tomorrow, Bill. And what do you do if you're Ed Cooley? How do you approach, you know, the daily grind from here on in? I mean, obviously, you try to win every game, but it's all about motivation and mental gymnastics this time of year for good teams. Forget about, you know, like we just said, I'm sure Kevin Willard went after his team pretty hard after giving up 87. What do you do if you're Ed Cooley? There's no easy answers.
I mean, that's why he makes the big bucks, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we're sitting here, because I have absolutely no idea. None. He's tried different lineups. They've tried to play different styles. They've tried shooting a lot of threes, not shooting many threes. He's played big lineups, small lineups, different guard combinations, different front court combinations. And you just go back to what Bill Parcells used to say. You are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
They're an average team.
Mm-hmm.
They're right around 500 overall. They're right around 500 in the Big East. What do they still do particularly well? Your St. John's Advance, I thought, asked a really good question. Providence still searching for their identity 24 games into the season. Still searching for what their strengths are. You know, what they're elite at. Doesn't really have anything. Defensively, they've been quite good.
Yeah.
Their effort has been excellent at that end of the floor. It's been pretty consistent. But when you're turning the ball over on offense like they did the other night, you're going to give up 80 points. It doesn't, you know, you're left defenseless, I guess you could say.
And I think if you're from a player's point of view, you know, it's been really 2 years of the same kind of look. You know, you play really hard. You know, every single coach in the Big East says, "Boy, the Providence is a tough team to play against." Blah blah blah. But offensively, you just it's just difficult.
It's discouraging.
2 years in a row where to get to 65, 70 points is hard, really hard. You know, with the less than 5, maybe 6, 7 exceptions throughout the season, you know, people say, well, why can't they just, you know, play like they did against Creighton? Well, that's an outlier. You know, they had 12 threes, whatever it was. I mean, A.J. Reeves had 6 all by himself. Look at the numbers. That's not who they are.
Right.
If that's an outlier. So we'll see what the Friars can pull off from now to the end of the season. They have a busy week with Seton Hall again at home. They go to Georgetown and then host Marcus Howard and Marquette next Saturday. So it is what it is. A little bit on Brown and Bryant. Brown, after really one of the most exciting games I've seen in a long time last Saturday.
I was going to say, you caught a classic.
Yeah,
there.
It was something. A last second, truly last second win by Brown over Harvard. When Tamanang Cho made a driving layup, and then a free throw with no time on the clock for a 1-point win. How about Harvard? 1-point loss, I believe, at Princeton. Then a 1-point win at Yale, and then a 1-point loss at Brown. 3 1-point decisions in a row for Tommy Amaker.
And the game before that was an overtime loss at Penn by 3.
Oof.
So get the heart attack, Bill.
Needs a break this weekend. I think they might go to upstate New York, or maybe they have
Cornell at home, Columbia at home.
They need those games bad.
Yeah, yeah. Big time.
But Brown has always the toughest road trip of the year at Princeton and Penn this weekend. Two huge games. If they could come back with a split, I think they'd be absolutely thrilled. Those are the two teams that I expect them to have to compete against for the third and fourth spot in the Ivy League. So big games.
Well, what about Brown, though? You know, sweeping 2 home weekends in a row, winning 4 straight, doing exactly what they needed to do after losing 2 in a row to Yale. Brown, as we sit here right now, controlling their own destiny for the Ivy League tournament. You couldn't ask for much more after 6 games if you're Mike Martin. You know, in the game against Dartmouth was one that they really couldn't lose. You know, Dartmouth, not a good team.
And they were in a tough spot down the stretch.
They were in a really tough spot. You know, and honestly, I think that was kind of a tough game to play considering you have Harvard the next night. You're probably looking thinking, no, Dartmouth's not very good and Harvard's right there. And,
right.
You know, let's bring them in. You managed to gut that one out. And then the Harvard game. I mean, just sensational the way that game finished. You know, there were some bizarre plays down the stretch. You know, a couple odd calls down the stretch, I guess you could say. You know, a couple conferences that lasted longer than plays on the floor. Yeah.
I was late for my date post-game.
Can imagine. Yeah. You know, but what you did see at the end was Brown getting the ball to one of its best players, Tamanang Cho, in space. They drew up a great play. Mike Martin did a great job getting him the ball in a spot where he could attack the rim. Did so. And, you know, in that spot, if you're going to have a successful season, you need your best players to come up with the goods. And he did exactly that.
He did. And then Bryant lost at home. I'm trying to think last night. You got to help me out, Bill.
They were at Sacred Heart.
At Sacred Heart, yep. Another loss, competitive loss. They're losing an awful lot of games by, you know, 8-10 points in the mix. It just shows that's exactly what a young team usually does.
They've got 8 losses in the NEC, and 5 of them are by single digits. You know, and if you talk to coaches, I think they'll talk about, you know, building a program, building a culture, whatever else. The next step that they talk about is almost harder than that, and it's where you actually break through. And you actually find a way to win close games and end up on the right side of 500 and, you know, maybe beat a good team here or there on the road. You know, that's a major step to take in terms of growth, in terms of progression. You know, Bryant was able to do that in its non-conference schedule. In the NEC, they've struggled a little bit more. They're at Central Connecticut on Saturday, one of the worst teams in college basketball. You know, but a team that played Bryant tough in Smithfield last Saturday. Bryant only won that game by 4. You know, so I would not be taking the Blue Devils for granted. You know, Bryant needs to take care of that one. Come back home and face, you know, one of the treats in the league Tuesday night, one of the treats nationally we've talked about. Merrimack is coming to town.
I like that, yeah. And Merrimack is still holding steady.
It's outstanding.
Atop the NEC. It's one of the great stories during their first year of Division I college basketball, and they're in good shape, right?
Yeah, they're tied with Robert Morris atop the league, and you know, just speaking for myself, I won't do so for you. I want Robert Morris to go away. Let's have Merrimack go ahead and win the league.
Well, hopefully they play them again.
Let's see.
Just take them down.
A little anarchy here.
By themselves.
Nope, they've already played them twice. They split with them, actually.
Yep.
Lost to them at home and beat them on the road. So, you know, typical Merrimack, you know, inexplicable results pretty much is what we're looking at.
That is it. Hope everyone enjoyed the Pick and Pop podcast. We'll be back next week with yet another version. Thank you.